Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. No Carter today, no child yet, but he's got other obligations. That guy is as unreliable as they come, but I'm very excited to introduce our guest. Big supporter of the podcast, first time on the podcast, lead writer for Ridiculous Upside, Dakota Schmidt. Dakota, how's it going, buddy?
I am doing good, Justin. I am excited to talk Can Charge basketball and also G League basketball over the course of this interview.
Look at you go. You're giving people a little bit of a rundown. You're ruining the facade I have here of never being prepared, even in the slightest. I don't appreciate that. I do have one very important question. Does anybody call you Schmitty?
Yes. Okay. Yes, good. Absolutely. And they also, some people think it's very hilarious to ask me if I'm north or south.
Okay, that went over my head. Please explain.
North or south, north and south Dakota.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
See, that should not have gone over my head, as I'm right adjacent to North and South Dakota, but it, of course, did. So I want to start things off before we get into the charge, because I do think there's some really interesting things to talk about there. This Mexico City expansion here for the G League, I saw the announcement. I haven't looked into a whole lot of the details, but I do find this very interesting. The first thing that popped in my head is, my God, this might be the most well-conditioned team of all time. Does this team have any affiliations right off the bat, or is that something that might be established a little further down the line?
No, they are going to be the only G League team that does not have an NBA affiliation. They're going to be an independent team, which means that they're not owned and operated by, obviously, an NBA affiliate.
Right.
Yeah, it's also they're also kind of testing the waters because they have a 5-year deal with the G League, and that team is Capenatis.
Okay.
I believe it's called, yeah.
Right, so this was a previously established team that's kind of being absorbed into the G League, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so is there supposed to be any... Do they treat this almost like an expansion draft where they can claim some guy from other teams? Obviously, I don't believe they would be able to take any two-way guys or guys that are connected to NBA teams, but is that sort of how this is being operated?
That's something I will try to figure out in the days to come because...
Okay, it hasn't really been disclosed yet, eh?
Yeah, because likely, like you said, this is already an established team, so I don't know if they're going to use the roster that they've established in the past,
mm-hmm.
which would kind of seem weird since all the 28 G League teams are all on the same page. They all, you know, have two-way players that they can utilize, a certain amount of affiliates,
right?
Tryouts, stuff like that. So that's something that I will try to figure out because the G League did not mention it in the particular press release when the move was announced.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting, and I think it's a smart way to get another market involved in watching the G League. Like, obviously, you're going to have the people that were connected to those teams introduced to this league, and I wonder if the league has more plans for other independent teams or if this is going to be something that is really only going to be introduced in markets that aren't already part of the NBA, so other foreign countries, things like that, or if maybe you see some other teams kind of pop up just to help deepen the pool in that league.
That's a really good thought because it was around a year or two ago that Jonathan Givony of formerly of Draft Express, now of ESPN, he was the first one to report about the potential Mexico City G League affiliation.
Yeah.
But at that time, he noted that it would be a hub for all the players that have participated in the various NBA academies that are, you know, throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. And I feel like if they were to go this route of populating more independent teams and stuff like that, it really would – pardon me. God, I'm blowing a tire here with my voice. I think it'd be one of those things where – and I've seen this talked about before – of expanding the draft would go a long way to kind of promote more interest in the G League. Like, I think if you add even a third or maybe even a fourth round – and you change the contract structure the same way they have with the two-way, I think that would be really, really instrumental in, one, generating more interest in the G League. I think that would incentivize more and more teams to install the same system that they have with their NBA club into the G League so that you have proper development of players. Like, that was one thing that I found striking with the Charge and the Cavs last year. Now, there's logical explanations for this, but the fact that they did not run the Cavs system was a little bit baffling, but that also may be a result of the change of coach and the Cavs not really having a system last year.
Yeah, most definitely. I have not watched enough Cavs to figure out what system John Beilein is currently running within Cleveland. But
how about we work backwards? How about you kind of give your thoughts on the system that the Charge are running? And this might actually be kind of instructive of how well this is being implemented here.
Yeah, definitely. In regards to how the Canada Charge are currently run, they have a they are a team that's based around wing depth, especially veteran wing depth. Guys like Levi Randolph, Sir Dominic Poynter, who I'm a huge fan of and I will want to talk about as we go along. And they are a deep team of veterans. Like I said, Randolph, Sir Dominic Poynter, Sheldon Mack, who spent some time with the Washington Wizards, J.P. Macker, who was with the Hornets last year. And they are a defensive minded team.
Yeah, I mean, so what we've seen with the Cavs a lot this year has been kind of a motion offense. And I think some of this has to do with just the absence of guards that can execute a pick and roll at high level. Like, Darius Garland isn't at that point yet where he's making the right reads quick enough. Colin Sexton clearly doesn't have that vision. Jordan Clarkson isn't motivated in that way. So we see a lot of kind of high handoffs, playmaking from every position. They'll run offense through Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. But what you've described kind of it kind of indicates that they are leaning with whatever their strength is, which varies, is different than what the Cavs are working with here, right?
Yeah, and I hate to interrupt you, but I'm looking at the stats right now, and the Charge are in a similar situation to the Cavs as they don't have a, you know, top facilitating point guard. They have eight players that are averaging two or more assists per game, but have nobody that is averaging four or more assists per game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which one of those averaging over two assists is our boy Dean Wade, who everybody is kind of keeping on the radar because he did impress a lot of people in summer league. Obviously, a little bit raw, but somebody that I think a lot of fans, and I've heard people mention this to us as well, is if Kevin Love does get moved and you don't have a big man brought back in the return, that really could kind of lead to the Cavs calling up Wade in some sort of reserve role.
And I feel like he would be a has the same kind of play style as Kevin Love, as he is a, you know, big that spends a lot of his time out on the perimeter, shooting threes. He is currently shooting 42% from three and 4.3 attempts per game, but also he is showing himself to be capable of, you know, driving to the rim. He did a lot of that, actually, for the Charge in their game against the Herd last night, especially in OT, which I believe is a, you know, good sign for him, you know, not being afraid to take the ball in and push the offense himself when in a, you know, a high pressure situation.
Right. What would you say? So I'm doing the stereotypical thing where I look at this big white guy and I say, all right, well, defense is probably going to have to be one of the areas that he grows in. Outside of that, what areas do you feel are holding him back from being an NBA rotation player? Like what aspects does he need to work on?
Probably defense awareness on that end of the court, because from an offensive perspective, I think he is has the traits to be at the NBA level. Like I said, you know, for a guy his size to shoot 42% for three, you know, that's massive. You know, you see somebody like
and on a good volume, like 4.5 attempts a game. That's really encouraging.
You know, just in the NBA, we see, you know, a guy like Davis Bertans, who is shooting high efficiency and a high volume, and you know, his stock is continuing to rise with the Wizards. And I'm not saying that Wade, I'm not guaranteeing that Wade will be at the level of Bertans, but you know, they're both similar types of players.
I mean, even if you mention them in the same sentence, I think that that's going to excite people. It's that so you're saying there's a chance type of fact here, because I mean, it's interesting, because one of the things that I've noticed, there was a time where the D League at the time just wasn't really being utilized properly by a lot of teams. You had let's say Toronto, I would kind of point out as being on the high end of the scale there, where they were really emphasizing using that, using it to develop prospects, to find guys and kind of mine guys from the G League. Fred VanVleet would be a great example of that. Pascal Siakam spent some time there. Chris Boucher. And now I feel with the emergence of these two-way contracts, it feels like there's less and less available talent in the G League if you need to replace a spot in the roster. Like, it used to be, okay, you would hope that if someone goes down, you can go find somebody in the G League, but that's seeming like less and less of an option. Do you agree with that assessment?
Definitely, because teams use their two ways in two different ways, in my opinion. One is for development and one is depth. So for the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think they have a guy in like a Tyler Cook, to a player like Tyler Cook. He's more development. And kind of the same thing with Dean Wade, even though he, I believe he had more experience at the college level. But there's also there's also other teams like the Brooklyn Nets, who have Henry Ellenson and Timothy Luwawu Cabarro, who, you know, obviously have a few years of experience at the NBA level. So they're more, you know, depth guys. The big league club. So I definitely think that, especially because of the fact that in regards to the depth, NBA teams have a two-way player, you know, in the waiting in the wings at a position of need, or a position they're really not deep at the big league level.
With guys kind of being claimed by these teams and all these two-way contracts, while it obviously hurts the amount of available G League talent, do you feel like the overall product is still strong? Like, do you think that the G League, how does it compare to years past?
I think that the talent level in the G League continues to get greater and greater, especially for the two-way talent. Obviously, it allows guys to stay in the G League, but also have like a 1 foot into the NBA. So and also take a higher salary than the standard G-leaguer. So that keeps them in the United States compared to taking, you know, more lucrative offer to go to Europe or go to China. But also at the same time that the two-way was added, the G-League upped their salary to $35,000 a year, or, you know, $7,500 per month, which, you know, isn't the best, but it's still a significant improvement over what it was when I started to watch the league back in 2012.
Yeah, and the other thing to consider, too, is when you are getting paid that in the G League, it's only for a few months in the year. Some of these guys, I'm sure, go out there and work a second job or something like that. So there's at least some potential there. Now, what I'm curious about is, with more teams invested in the G League with these two-way contracts and using it as kind of a feeder system and something to develop prospects, do you feel like the overall play has kind of improved? What I mean by that is, there, the sense I got with the G League a few years back was that it's almost a little AAU-ish, where guys are just going out there to get their own numbers, and there wasn't as much team basketball. Do you first of all agree with that assessment, and has there been a change in recent years?
I think it has improved over the past few years.
Okay.
Especially because how we've seen more G League coaches, you know, get big-time gigs or even become head coaches at the NBA level. Guys like Taylor Jenkins, you know, Nick Nurse, who won the title last year with the Toronto Raptors. So I think that
I forgot Nurse was with the 905, right? He was was he the head coach there, or was he with Stackhouse?
No, he was with the RGV Vipers back in, like, 2013. Then he became an assistant.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Well, that makes a whole lot more sense.
But Jerry Stackhouse is another great example of coaches that have gone on to success or getting bigger opportunities, because now he's with Vanderbilt. He's the head coach of Vanderbilt in the SEC in college basketball. So I think coaches see those opportunities, that those current G-League coaches see the opportunities that former coaches get in. That makes them more hungry, because they see that opportunity being crystallized.
Right.
Also, with teams putting more emphasis on development in the G League and, you know, emphasizing the system, that gives the G League team itself more emphasis to, you know, work on the defense end, because obviously they want their two-way guys improving that end. They want their signees to improve in that end. They also, you know, potential guys that they had on affiliate deals that, you know, play with them during training camp, you know, they want to see them improve too.
Yeah, I could see there being some tension, because the high-end guys in the G League, you kind of have to use them, I would imagine, in more high usage roles, right? Like, you have to feature those guys because they give you your best chance of going out there and winning. But at the same time, there's a conflict to that, because most of these players, if they do break through and they do earn a spot on an NBA roster, they're likely being asked to kind of fulfill a very specific role that may vary from what they're doing in the G League. So I can see there being a little bit of a tension there, or a disconnect when it comes to the player development.
Yeah, I actually want to go on one of the things that you talked about, and how when G League players get called up to the NBA, they want to fill up a
particular role. Over it. Yeah.
I see that a lot happening with the call-ups that actually stick in the NBA, and I think that falls into two categories, great shooters and great defenders. In regards to great shooters, you know, Troy Daniels, Seth Curry, they, you know, have been able to stick in the NBA. And from a defense perspective, somebody like Robert Covington, who was a first overall pick in past the G League draft, you know, somebody like Alex Caruso or Torrey Craig of the Denver Nuggets, who was on a two-way and, you know, has been able to establish a role within the Nuggets rotation. And I'm sure there are, you know, are other names that I'm forgetting right now.
Yeah, DeAndre Liggins was a guy that obviously spent some time with the Cavs, won a G League Defensive Player of the Year there. Eddie Tavares, another guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's it is a really interesting thing to see how teams use this. And my hope has always been, I mean, from a selfish standpoint, I wanted a G League team up here. Maybe you could be affiliated with Minnesota or something like that, because Minnesota has played preseason games in Winnipeg. Then that'd probably be the closest thing that I would get to NBA basketball here. But yeah, I do find that the continued growth of the G League and the emphasis that teams are putting on it to be really, really interesting, because I do feel that this is one area where the NBA has failed in comparison to other leagues. You look at baseball, obviously has a massive, massive minor league system, even though some of that is being chipped away right now. And NHL, really, really prominent there. And NFL, I mean, they just call it the NCAA, but because of how many years they have to spend in college, they get the free marketing, they get the free advertising and free player development. So you can't really compare that. But of the teams that have actual minor leagues, I feel like the NBA has done the worst job so far, but seems to be trending in a better direction.
Yeah, most definitely. We've seen, you know, just look at the Raptors, the players that surrounded Lowry and Kawhi on that title team. Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, those two guys in particular that played gigantic roles behind their playoff success and, you know, obviously pushing them to the title, you know, just two years prior to that, they were, you know, pushing the 905 to a G League title. So right. I think that success, and also some other teams like what we've seen with the Houston Rockets, Clint Capella developing down with the RGB Vipers now. You know, he has a big time deal with the Rockets. The San Antonio Spurs in a way. It's not really, I guess, besides Jonathan Simmons, who, you know, obviously really huge story of being spending $150 to, you know, try out for the Austin Spurs, getting call-ups, spending time with San Antonio and getting a big-time deal with Orlando. But for San Antonio, it's mostly been assignees, guys like Derek White and DeJounte Murray, who were able to develop down in Austin. And now, you know, they have they're part of the future of San Antonio.
How would you rate the Cavs and the Charge when it comes to use of the G League and kind of their presence in the league?
That's a, I think it's something that will be, I wouldn't put them with teams like the RG Vipers, 905. I wouldn't put that for Austin Spurs.
Okay.
But I do see some upside in how the current team is, and how somebody like Dean Wade and
Sir Dominic,
Sir Dominic, obviously, but he's been a veteran, and Tyler Cook, who has been dealing with injury problems over the course of the season, but. I wouldn't put the Can Charge in that upper echelon.
Mm-hmm. No, and that makes sense. And you just kind of the Cavs and the Charge, I guess you're hoping that both teams are looking to kind of establish a little bit more of a culture and get things trending in the right direction when it comes to player development.
Yeah, it you know, takes a while to establish. It's kind of hard to establish a culture when you just got a new coach during summer.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I appreciate you reminding me of Tyler Cook, because I had completely forgot that he was with the team. He's an interesting guy to me. So he doesn't do a whole lot for me. I get a lot of Kenneth Faried vibes from him. But it seems like unless you're a real outlier, like let's say the Montrezl Harrell type of outlier, unless you really have that outside shot as an undersized big man, it's tough to find a consistent spot for you in a rotation.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that's we've seen more undersized bigs that really excel at the G League level due to their ability to just collect rebound after rebound, or and not really get much of an opportunity in the NBA. I think the best example of that is Jamil Warney, mm-hmm. who in three seasons at the G League level, he was a consistent double-double guy, and he developed a bit as a passer, and he got a little outside jumper, but he was mainly an inside rebound guy. And right. he only got one call-up over the course of his three seasons in the G League. He only got one call-up with the Dallas Mavericks, and he was one of the best, mm-hmm. one of the best forwards in the G League. So I definitely agree with you on that when it comes to Cook. And like I said before, he's probably somebody that the Cavaliers wanted to continue to develop and add more traits to his overall game, because I think he really needs to, because he's kind of a one-trick pony in a way.
Right. Now, you mentioned Sir Dominic earlier that you kind of wanted to get into him. Obviously, he's somebody that's been around for a while now. He's a veteran G League presence. Do you feel like he's somebody that could make an impact on the next yes. level and just kind of needs the right situation?
Yes, yes, okay. yes.
All right. you go off. Let the people know about what he's bringing to the table.
Man, Sir Dominic Poynter, let me tell you about him, Mr. Justin Rowan. Now, this is somebody I'm excited to talk about. We've right. had a good conversation for a while, but this is somebody I really want to talk about. Man, he has been one of the best defenders in the G League since his time as a rookie. After spending 2 years at the G League level, he went overseas to Europe to play basketball, but now in the 2018-19 season, he came back and he was a totally improved player. He was still fantastic at the G League level when it came to defense, but he added something that has been a pariah that has been biting him since he was drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers. I believe it was back in 2015, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that is a outside jumper. Last year, small sample size, I think it was around 2.5 attempts per game, but still he shot 41% from the field. He's added more volume in his perimeter jumper this year, 3.6 attempts per game, but he's still a pretty solid 35% three-point shooter. Alongside that decent three-point shooting, he is a animal. He is a monster on the mm-hmm. defense. And Mr. Justin Rowan, he's a guy that can defend multiple positions. He is a somebody that when you look at a stats page, your eyes pop open, because he is averaging more than two steals and more than two blocks per game as a 6'6" wing that's able to do that. Not a lot of players could do that at the G League level. Not a lot of players could do that at the NBA level or NCAA level. That's why I think he has been a special player at the G League level, and why I think he belongs in the NBA.
He's a really interesting guy, because the comparison to me, the guy that I always kind of think of when I have seen him play, is David Nwaba. It's like, how does this guy not get more opportunities, because he makes such an impact on the defensive end? And I think Poynter might have even a little bit better of an outside shot than Nwaba. You look at his stats.
Oh, yeah.
I think he averages around 2 3-point attempts a game. Not doesn't shoot the lights out, but has some ability there. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The Cavs have absolutely no control over him, right? Like any team could pick him up at this point.
No, he's essentially like all players in the G League that aren't assignees or on two-way deals or don't have draft rights that belong to an NBA team, like Jalen Hans, he's on the Long Island Nets, but his draft rights belong to Brooklyn, so only Brooklyn can call him up. Other NBA teams can trade for him, but only Brooklyn can call him up. But Sir Dominic Poynter is essentially a free agent that's signed on a G League contract.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I mean, what you've described is somebody that the Cavs could absolutely use, especially when you look at the absence of depth on the wing. They just have so many damn guards right now. It drives me absolutely nuts. I think Dylan Windler, once he gets back, that might take away some of those potential minutes, because I think Jetty Osman, Windler, and even – goddamn McKinney, I feel like he should be getting some time, because I think McKinney's a good player. Like, it kind of drives me nuts that he's not getting a little more burn. So you've seen some of Windler in the G League, or at least the highlights of what he's done. How did he look before that stress reaction acted up? Because I know a lot of Cavs fans, myself included, feel like that this is a guy that can come in and maybe make some impact. I do feel like those college seniors get overlooked a little too frequently in the draft, and sometimes they can come in with a refined skill set that helps right away.
In the little time I saw Windler's, because he only played two games and only averaged 18 and a half minutes mm-hmm. per game, so his time in the court was limited. He didn't look like the Dylan Windler that the Cleveland Cavaliers picked up. He wasn't the type of perimeter shooter that he was in college, and I believe he was at Belmont.
Yeah, yes, he was.
So small sample size, and, you know,
trying to get reps in, trying to get conditioning done, and all that. Yeah, and all the qualifiers.
Yeah, also getting adjusted to, you know, his new teammates and playing at the G League level, and I think that the jury remains out on Windler, at least at the G League level. I want to see more of him, you know, when he comes back, because do you believe that when he's healthy, they'll send him back to Canton?
Yeah, I think he's going to spend some time with the Charge. He's going to get his conditioning up there. Especially right now, there's no incentive to rush him, both because this season isn't — they're really not playing for anything. They also, until they start trading away some of those guys like Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Knight, and maybe some of the other veterans, they got to find time to play Kevin Porter Jr., and they're figuring that out by playing him some minutes at small forward. So I think if you put Windler in the mix before you get rid of some of those veterans, that does make things a little bit more difficult.
Definitely.
Do you feel like there's some current misconceptions with the G League, or things that people are kind of missing when they think about the league?
I think that they're missing out on how solid the talent level is. I watch G League games, and I continue to be excited about how, you know, talented players are. Like, Sir Dominic Poynter is a — in the grand scheme of things, he is a great basketball player. Mm-hmm. He might not be in the NBA, but he is a great basketball player, great defender, solid shooter. Levi Randolph, also with the Cannon Charge, very well-rounded, you know, veteran wing. And, you know, overall, the talent level in the G League, it's sometimes he lapses on defense and lapses in – effort, but most of the time, I'll say 70% of the time, it is great, entertaining, competitive basketball featuring a lot of extremely talented players. And I think that the talent level in the G League is something that gets overlooked. Mm-hmm. And also, watching G League games makes me appreciate the NBA more. Because I see these talented players in the G League and, you know, thinking they really don't have much of an opportunity to get to the NBA, let alone stay in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I think the guys that, you know, have been able to mark out a career at the NBA level, you know, not just as a all-star, but, you know, rotation guys for, you know, 5+ seasons, I don't think people appreciate how good those kind of players are.
I think that that's a really good thought there. And it kind of makes me think, how would you compare it to one of the things that I hate more than anything, which is college basketball. Like, I feel like college basketball does not resemble basketball. Like, I think it's a bastardized version of the game. It makes it really tough to evaluate whether or not guys can make the leap to the next level. Would you say that it compares more to NBA basketball and the type of basketball that people actually enjoy to watch? Because I feel like what you're describing there of showing how good these guys are in these systems and still can't make it to the NBA, I feel like it, what you've described is a better showcase for those guys than what you see in college.
Definitely. You know, at the, you know, G League level, they don't send all, you know, whatever, 30 seconds trying to figure out a play before they throw up a shot. And
Do they play two centers and a bunch of guys that can't dribble? Because that's the, if you want to sell me on the G League, tell me that there isn't that,
no,
that shit.
No, there isn't. There okay. are players, there are multiple players on each team out there on the court that can dribble. They can also, you know, take the ball to the rim. I know that that may be surprising to people that watch college basketball, but players at the G League level can definitely do that. I think that defense is one thing, that effort on the defense, and like I said before, there are lapses in that end, but I definitely think it's gotten better over the years, as you've seen guys like David Nwaba, Jamario Jones, and like the aforementioned Sir Dominic Poynter be able to establish themselves as, you know, potential NBA players due to their work on the, you know, defense end. I think I have set an example for other players that are currently, you know, in the G League. So I think it's a better precedent over how precedent to the NBA compared to college basketball. And okay. also, the one thing I really love about the G League is that it lets young players experiment with different type of skill sets that they weren't able to do in a very restrictive system back in college.
So what you're saying is I'm not going to tune in and see Aaron Kraft getting highlighted. Is that correct?
No.
Okay. Thank God. Now, Dakota, I really appreciate you coming on here and kind of filling both me and the listeners in on something that we don't really know a whole lot about. I think that's true for the majority of NBA fans. But now we're going to go into something painful that I think all Cavs fans are very aware of, and that's how good the Milwaukee Bucks are. That's how good Giannis is. Team and player very near and dear to your heart, and they laid a little bit of a whooping on the Cavs last night.
They did. It was I don't know why you sound so upset, because for me it was an enjoyable game. It was just a relaxing viewing experience, as has a lot of the Bucks victories, aside from, you know, the game on the previous night against Memphis Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson putting up what, like 22 points in the third quarter. But besides that, it was a relaxing viewing experience. Seeing Giannis do Giannis things, Chris Middleton continue to excel, Dante DiVincenzo continue to develop into a really solid rotation piece at the wing for the team.
Hey, top 20 player according to RPM. How about that?
All right, the advanced stats loves them some White Dante.
Yeah, shout out White Dante. Well, at least for Cavs fans, we will always have 39-39. We will always have that Darius Garland second quarter spree that was so much fun and gives us a glimpse of what we hope Garland can be, because the high water marks for him still continue to be really, really exciting. And I want more and more Garland as the season continues. But do you feel like this is the year for the Bucks, or do you feel like they're still a piece away?
I watch this team, and I think we'll have to wait and see. I've been excited about this 18-game winning streak, but there's better competition coming up. Next week they play against the Los Angeles Lakers. That's going to be a huge marquee matchup, two of the best teams in the NBA. Then a few days later on Christmas Day against the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm-hmm. National TV. A lot of people are going to watch it while they open up their Christmas presents, spend time with family, or try to avoid family to watch basketball, which something that I might do.
Yeah,
and I say that as something that knows that nobody in my family is listening to this podcast.
I don't miss the Cavs playing on Christmas Day. It's too much because I, especially now that I'm married and I got two families to go see and whatnot. It's tough. You want to be able to spend the day with the family, but I know it can also be a whole lot of fun. The 2016 Christmas game with the Kyrie game winner and Richard Jefferson dunking on Klay Thompson, that's still one of my favorite basketball memories. So I do hope that goes well for you. This Bucks team really reminds me of the 2009 Cavs, and I know some people will say that as an insult, and I say that as someone that believes that team could have won a championship if the Orlando Magic weren't all on performance-enhancing drugs. So I feel good about your chances right now, especially with Philadelphia looking as anemic as they do on the offensive end.
And that makes me happy as somebody that's on the Giannis side of the Giannis versus Ben Simmons rivalry.
Well, the Ben Simmons slander, it's a little too much.
He's a great basketball player.
He is. And my hot take last year that everyone dragged me for was that they should trade Embiid for Anthony Davis. Because they might have even been able to get an additional asset when you consider the term on Embiid's deal. That was my big thing because I thought they'd be able to get up and down, run the floor more. You could see the pick and roll between Simmons and AD to a level that I think would surpass what he can do with Embiid, which we're seeing some of that in LA. So that was my big hot take. I'm not an Embiid guy. The guy literally and figuratively shits his pants in the playoffs. So we'll see how this goes. Best of luck to you there.
He literally did that? I think that would have been bigger news.
Oh, no. He literally did. Remember, he had like explosive diarrhea throughout the game, and it like impacted his ability to play because
I forgot that.
Yeah, he was going around with the itchy booty. And anyone that's had the itchy booty, it's not something you want to be dealing with when you're playing basketball.
But going back to the Bucks, I think one thing – a lot of people are talking about how amazing Giannis has been, and he's a front runner for MVP. But the inside defense, the paint defense that the Bucks have shown this year is incredible. Is so hard for players to get second chance opportunities and to get buckets inside the paint. Brooke Lopez has been fantastic on that end of the court. And I think NBA, really smart NBA people like Seth Parnow, he sent in a tweet that Brooke Lopez, perhaps, you know, dark horse defense player of the year, Robin Lopez has been solid on the, you know, defensive end. Of course, you have Giannis, and the Bucks defense, plus how great Giannis has been, plus the steady production of Chris Middleton has made this Bucks team into a joy to watch, even though a lot of the games are basically done by the time we get to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, we Cavs fans have experienced that a couple times now against you guys. Well, Dakota, I really do appreciate you coming on and giving your insight here. This was a lot of fun, and I've actually learned something, which I'm sure our listeners learned something as well, which is rare for this podcast to actually do some teaching. So thank you so much for coming on. Folks, you can follow Dakota at Dakota_Schmidt on Twitter. As I mentioned, lead writer for Ridiculous Upside. Check out Ridiculous Upside for all your G League analysis, SB Nation site there, part of that and brotherhood.
Also, yeah, one last
go ahead,
thing.
I recently,
a few weeks ago, wrote a piece about another can charge player that we haven't had a chance to write about, talk about, I mean, and that is Levi Randolph. I'm also a big fan of him, so Go to Ridiculous Upside, scroll down a bit, and you'll see an article about Canton charge Wayne Levi Randolph.
Awesome. I'll tweet that out from the podcast as well. It's a bit of a thank you, and to make things easier for them, for everyone to go check that out. So thanks again, Dakota. If you guys want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to subscribe to our premium feed where we give analysis a couple extra times a week, rookie reports, it's basically like a Patreon. Only the money is going directly to us rather than giving them the cut. You can do so by just Googling Chase Down Premium. You should be able to find it there. If you have any troubles, let us know. But however you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. So thanks again to Dakota. Thanks to all our listeners. And until next time, go Cats.